You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm April Baer. Our relationship with social media is, in the best of times, a double-edged sword. We can keep up with far-off friends and family and see oodles of best-quality cat pictures. And we can also partake in up-to-the-minute disinformation campaigns online. Maybe this has never felt more true than right now during the new coronavirus epidemic. How should we be handling all the online news? Cliff Lampe is a professor of information with the School of Information at the University of Michigan. He studies social media, among other things. Hey, Cliff.
Hi.
And we've also invited Vince Duffy, news director at Michigan Radio, to join us. Hi, Vince.
Hi, April.
I wanted to ask both of you how much time you're spending on social media these days. Cliff, how about you?
Somewhere around 24 hours a day.
I mean, how do you balance it out? I mean, are you just hard in on, you know, locked in on Twitter, can't tell yourself away? Or, you know, what are you looking at right now?
I mean, I think there's, you can think about it being in two ways that you're using social media. There's of course, reading social media and paying attention to the news and all the information that's flowing out there. But there's also what you're posting and how you're connecting to people. So a lot of my activity right now, of course, being a University of Michigan professor, is reaching out to students and working with other faculty to think about how we deliver our courses online and things like that. So I think thinking about how you're contributing to the environment, not just what you're consuming from the environment, is an important thing to do.
Very true. Vince, you have an occupational hazard in this, needing to keep an eye on what's going on from leaders and health officials and, you know, administering the newsroom right now. How much time are you on?
Well, I was thinking, you know, being on social media is actually part of my job. I have to monitor Twitter and the station Facebook page and my own Facebook page. I'm in touch with a lot of other journalists as Facebook friends. But I was just thinking when you asked that question that I think since Tuesday, since primary day, I've probably been on less just because I've been so busy coordinating our coverage here and trying to figure out what's going on in Michigan, that there really hasn't been any social time on social media. I've really just sort of jumped in and tried to answer specific questions that people have had and see what's going on this particular story about the coronavirus.
Guys, I'm going to ask this as politely and delicately as I can. What is, shall we say, the most surprising thing you've seen in the last 72 hours online? Cliff, how would you answer that?
I'm going to answer a positive thing. I've been really happy to see the amount of social support that people are giving. One of the things that's going to happen with social distancing is that people are going to be separated from their networks. And so I've been super surprised and super happy, actually, about how there's kind of a spirit of togetherness that I see forming on social media, which social media has not been known for recently.
I saw an interesting post just today, someone remembering their experience as a parent during 9/11 when all of a sudden school was out for a period of time. Seriously, what do you do with a 7-year-old for an extended period of time there? I don't know, Vince. I mean, there's also a lot of misinformation out there.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most surprising things that I continue to see is this sort of theory that this virus has been created and promoted by the media in some way because there's an effort to discredit President Trump and that this is all some sort of manufactured thing. And then more locally, the strangest thing that I keep seeing is people now defending their hoarding of toilet paper and saying why it was an important thing for their family and defending themselves for going and buying lots of toilet paper.
Really?
It's a important thing in people's lives. And if they have to self-isolate, it's something they do not want to run out of. And people are kind of being unapologetic about having gone to Kroger or Meijer or wherever and buying a lot of it.
And filling up the entire back of the car with that stuff. Cliff, how do you think about our responsibilities when we see something online that, shall we say, may be less than factual?
This is a tough one because, the science of the coronavirus is actually fairly complicated. And it's really hard, you shouldn't trust just any social media person that you know to be an expert in, you know, epidemiology. So I think this is a time, and I hope it's a time that we continue to have, where we should go back to the experts, right? This is a time when we should think about what our epidemiologists and doctors who specialize in these kinds of diseases telling us.
I mean, have you been in this position where you've actually gotten out there and said, okay, let's just dial this back a little bit or pointed people towards sources? I mean, what's the right tone to take in a post like that?
I think the right tone to take, and it's tough. Nobody likes having their ideas challenged, and it's hard to be told that you're wrong. So I think the best thing to do is to first recognize that everybody's struggling in an environment that's filled with information. The second thing that it's important to do is to point to sources and just say, this is what I heard, and not try to pretend to be an expert yourself.
Yeah. I mean, Vince, you're in a position of being able to say, please just join us at the Michigan Radio website for all the latest correct information.
One of the things that I've seen that has been a positive, I think, is some of my more conservative friends who have, over the past year or two, been the people who are fastest to call out fake news and they're not going to believe people in positions of authority and they don't think the media is telling the truth, have kind of changed in the last week. And I'm actually getting questions, personal questions from a lot of them on what does a state test mean versus the CDC test and what is a presumptive positive and how is this being done? And it's really sort of been interesting to see the people who were kind of on that fake news bandwagon who this week are sort of coming back and saying, okay, all is forgiven. We trust you. Please give us good information.
One of the things I've noticed is one of the things that social media can do for us is illuminate some experiences from people who we may not come in contact with every day. There's a woman I met who now writes for the LA Times. Her family is Salvadoran, and she was talking about the complications of talking with her parents, who are senior citizens and who have lived through a civil war, and trying to get trying to talk to them about taking the threat seriously. And what does that even mean to ask someone who's lived through so much trauma to think about a virus as, you know, as a true threat? It's, I don't know. Have either of you come into contact with some people who normally you wouldn't be filtering as part of your daily diet?
I work with a lot of young people, and I think one of the things that you see, there's a lot of use of humor and memes in the younger generations. And so, and that's a fine way to deal with trauma. But I also think that it's been a process to help some of them understand that this isn't about necessarily their personal health, but it's about how they're spreading the disease and their role in an ecology of health. And so some of them have started, for instance, to call the coronavirus the boomer doomer or things like that, because it mostly affects older people. And that levity has a place in managing their own stress, but they also have to understand where they sit in terms of as possible vectors for spreading the disease.
Vince, can you unpack for us about how basic decisions are made in the newsroom about what should be trusted online and what should not?
Well, for us, we tend to go with sources that we know that we can believe. And so, you know, for example, I have a daughter who texted me this week. She's a student at Eastern Michigan University, and she said classes have been canceled at Eastern Michigan. And she was surprised because the first thing I said was, do you have a document you can send me to show that? And so, you know, we're looking at source documents. I wasn't even going to believe my own daughter to report something. I wanted the email that she received from the school. And really, for
us, was she mad?
She was just surprised. But we weren't going to go on the air and say, you know, a source close to the news director says. We wanted to see the document. And that's really just solid reporting. That's how we do our journalism here. And so we just continue to do it that way. We have, you know, official sources that we can go to. We want to see documentation as often as we can. We spent a fair amount of yesterday chasing down a couple of rumors. And we're very careful not to go on the air just because somebody tells us something that's interesting. We make sure that we check it out before we put it out there.
Right. I mean, how many times have all of us heard within the past 5 days, I heard today that, I mean, just, I feel like I'm, that whole phrase is just a red flag for me right now. Hey, Cliff, there are a bunch of younger people who will be at home these next few weeks, possibly even more vulnerable to absorbing misinformation than ever before. What do you think the biggest dangers are there?
I think the biggest dangers are that people depend on bad heuristics for deciding what's good information or not. And bad heuristics would be, for instance, that it confirms a bias that they hold or that it's an emotional response. I think if I had a dream for what students would be doing while they're at home, it would be doing research, right? I would love for them to be looking at experts and look at source documents and doing some of their own reading and not depending on short form memes or tweets to determine what's true or not.
Yeah. It's kind of, I know there's a lot for parents out there who may be dealing with trying to figure out just what they should be telling their kids under any circumstances, not to mention the logistics of 3 weeks, possibly more, with kids out of school. But that's probably as decent a setup as any. Are there any concerns, maybe Vince, that you have about how people are filtering all of this or where their concerns are in the moment? There's a lot of logistics to be dealt with right now with folks working from home.
I think the concern that I have is that not so much working from home, but with social media and the news consumption patterns that people are following, is that there really still seem to be a lot of people out there who are hanging on to this idea that the coronavirus and COVID-19 is really no worse than the flu. and that everything that's being done is an overreaction, and that we should just not worry about it because people catch the flu and die, and that's not something that should concern us any more than any other strain of the flu. And I think what the information that the state and the government is trying to get out is that what we're trying to prevent here is a peak and have a bunch of people all sick at the same time so that it overloads the system. This isn't just, a flu-like disease, but it's a flu-like disease that everybody might catch at the same time.
Right. Cliff, how about you? What's top of mind as people are going into the weekend and possibly a situation where they have ever more time relatively isolated during which they might be staring at screens?
Yeah, my guess is people are going to turn to social media for some of that social connection. One of the things we see happening is a lot of stress and friction between people. As you know, there are people who think this is being overblown or underblown. It reminds me of the George Carlin joke where everybody who drives faster than me is reckless and everybody who drives slower than me is an idiot. Like, that's how people feel about reactions to the virus as well. And you see a lot of this. I see people unfriending each other on Facebook and in Instagram because of their reactions to the coronavirus.
But I also see people who are not in the healthcare business or in the news business who also seem to be really, in my opinion, paying way too much attention to this and sharing every bit of information that they have. And you can really almost see some people, I'm not in the position to diagnose this, but I would assume almost developing a mental health situation over how much attention they are paying to this news story and maybe just needing to step back away from it for a little while.
And say, I've done what I can. Mm-hmm. Well, right. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. And here's hoping we can all just maybe play some Scrabble this weekend and chill out. Cliff Lampe is...
Thanks much.
Cliff Lampe is a professor of information with the School of Information at the University of Michigan. And Vince Duffy's news director here at Michigan Radio. Guys, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you don't have it already, please download the Michigan Radio app onto your smartphone. Our digital team is sending out notifications that will keep you up to date on all the latest facts, figures, and alerts on COVID coming from the state of Michigan.